name of the talk receiving is the desire for sensual pleasure. I'll be speaking mostly in English, but anytime I don't know a word, I'll just say it in English. Should I catch up? The desire and the thirst for sensual pleasures, kama and tanha, are a very major theme in the Buddhist teachings. It appears on many lists. It's the first one on the list of asavas, what we learned the other night. It is the first on the list of the three kinds of cravings, the first on the list of the four kinds of attachments, the first on the list of the three roots of the thoughts, the first on the list of the five hindrances, and it appears in dependent origination and is in the Four Noble Truths. Quite an appearance. So what do we learn from the fact that it appears on so many lists, other than that the Buddha was very fond of lists? I think we can easily conclude that the reason the desire for sensual pleasure is such a major theme in Buddhist teachings is because it is such a major force in our lives. In his book, Who Dies?, Stephen Levine writes, "It seems we were born thirsty." And he likens in Umamshil our endless, unstoppable thirst for sensual pleasures to a person walking in the desert and seeing a mirage, a Fata Morgana, and no matter how many miles he or she walks, no matter how fast or slow, how many steps she takes, she will never come closer to that oasis, not by even one step. The oasis always stays at a distance. Such is the promise of satisfaction and happiness through sensual desires. It is never really fulfilled. The other night, Shaila spoke of this thirst, or this tanha in Pali, and said it is like someone really thirsty drinking salt water. It will never quench their thirst. Lo yarve et atzama. What would we say of someone like that? That despite his or her personal empiric experience, keeps again and again drinking salt water, hoping to quench his or her thirst. We would probably think that he or she are not very wise. But we are not much different. When I first came back for my first trip to India, after months of dust and dirt and schlepping in roads in heat and monsoons and showering in filthy buckets and in cold waters, I thought I would never forget the first hot western shower in Israel. I thought that forever our Savior will remember these wonderful feelings of the touch of the hot water, zormim lelo hagbala, in abundance, and the smell of the fresh soap and the cleanliness that was that almost felt sterile, and the temperature of the water that I could control. How much pleasure and enjoyment can a one simple shower give? It was almost a spiritual experience, and every cell in my body was singing. But as expected, this euphoric feeling didn't last forever, as I had hoped, but faded with time and became blurry and turned into a faded memory that every attempt to repeat it, l'shachzer oto, מתגלה כניסיון עקר. לחוויית החושים יש תכונה מפליאה ומעצבנת. הן נוטות להתפוגג ולהיעלם במהירות. ולנו יש תכונה מפליאה, לא פחות, שעל אף שהניסיון האישי שלנו מוכיח לנו אחרת, אנחנו מנסים להיאחז בהן, לשמר אותן ולשחזר אותן שוב ושוב. אלא שניסיון כזה נועד מראש לכישלון, כמו בשירו של פול סיימן, "Sleep sliding away, you know the nearer your destination, the more you sleep sliding away." The more we try to hold on to sensual pleasures, the faster they dissolve and disappear. And the pleasant sensual feelings, the moving music, the excellent food, the divine lovemaking, swimming in the ocean at night, a luxurious massage, a beautiful sunset, all these experiences that we feel, it seems like they will, their impression is everlasting, שישאירו בנו חותם שלעולם לא ימחה, somehow they fade and remain as a mental memory of a feeling and not the feeling itself. Getting the sensual objects brings temporary satisfaction and only increase the thirst. According to the Buddhist approach, the source of our suffering is not in the object, not in the frustrating behavior of our partners, not in the undisciplined children, not in our grueling job or in our weak health, not even in the computer that broke down and in the car that fell apart. The source of our suffering is our attachments, our clinging, ההיאחזויות, and our attempt to find a steady and lasting happiness in the temporary, constantly changing, fleeting sensual pleasures. From looking at our lives and of our relationship with sensual pleasures, it's easy to deduct that they are not a reliable source for happiness and lasting well-being, and that there is no use to try and hold on to them. It's like trying to hold water in a feast. The more you press it, the more drips away and vanish, the faster it vanishes, and any attempt to hold on to it and keep it only increases our awareness to its impermanence. In his book A Path with Heart, Jack Kornfield ממשיל את התשוקה to a demon, to a hungry demon, but that has a huge stomach and a tiny little mouth. And one can never satisfy this demon because of this huge belly. Our desires have no limits or boundaries. One is fulfilled, while one is fulfilled, and already a new one is knocking at our doors. כמאמר חז"ל, משביעו רעב ומרעיבו שבע. In my own life, I could see just a while ago the antenna in my car broke, and I used to listen to radio and to music when I was driving around in my car, and then I couldn't hear, couldn't listen to the radio. So many months I was driving without a radio, and the only wish I had was that the antenna would be fixed and I could listen to music again. So now the antenna is fixed and I can hear music again. And now I have a new wish. I wish I had a compact disc in the car so I can choose which music I want to listen to. The mind always wants something. Moreover, the Buddhist approach says, and I think if we scrutinize our lives, we will see that it is true, that at the heart of the happiness, of the pleasure and of the fulfilled desire, right in there is the seed of pain, of dukkha. For one moment, we may feel a divine happiness when we discover, for instance, that the love of our life, the one we've been longing for and fantasizing about for weeks, months, or years, reciprocate our feelings and loves us back. How happy we are for one moment. And in the next, already we have some butterflies in our stomach because of fear of losing it. Already sprouts in us the desire to hold on to it, to hold on to this love and keep it forever. Already blooms the clingings and the attachments. The moment of happiness and completion, nimhal, maher, maher midai, too fast, too soon, with pain and incompletion. And we discover, disappointedly, again and again, that this moment is short-lived and disappointing. Not only that the moment of joy and happiness from fulfilling a desire is short-lived, but also, if we really look closely at things, we will discover an interesting phenomenon. The feelings of joy and completion, which we attribute to the object of desire that was attained, שאנחנו מייחסים למוסד שוקה שהושג, these feelings are actually created because of a moment we experience a desire-free moment. We experience a moment free of the contraction, the stress, and the feeling of lack, תחושת החסר, that characterize and accompany every desire. So for one moment, we lack nothing. לא חסר לנו דבר. איזו הקלה. What a relief that this satisfaction and relief are short-lived. How soon will another desire knock on our sense doors? Our mind is fascinated and enchanted with objects of sensual pleasures. This fascination, this blindness, blocks us from seeing things clearly and from understanding how to free the mind. Free the mind from craving and clinging. Because where is craving? Craving is in the mind. Where is clinging? Attachment. Attachment is in the mind. And where is freedom from attachment and clinging? Freedom is also in the mind. I'd like to suggest now some suggestions that I have come up with as to how to work with cravings within ourselves. When cravings come up. So I was kind of imagining myself with craving and seeing what I can come up with. And so I suggest that you do the same now. When I say, think of a craving that you have, something that's kind of like, not like the worst, the biggest craving that you might have, but something that you're kind of familiar with, that you know that it comes up in your life again and again. And whenever I say, see if you can kind of like in your mind apply it. And if it, because then it's more tangible, it's more concrete. So I started with thinking about more gross cravings, more little gasim, concrete, mukhashim, addictive patterns. So first is willingness. We have to be willing to stop in our tracks and not perpetuate or give in to these habitual tendencies and not to deepen them. And it's kind of like the image I have is like a the thing you have, you put on a horse mouth, and when a horse is, you know, running, galloping, whatever, and to stop it, you really have to act like this. And sometimes we really have to do that to ourselves. We really have to go, whoa! And it's kind of like going against the stream. And the Buddha uses this this phrase, or this, it's actually a very powerful image, going against the stream. Can you imagine yourself in a stream? The stream is going one way, and we're trying to go another way. So the stream of all our tendencies and all our conditionings and the force of craving is pushing us and pulling us one way, and we're trying to go another way. So first we have to find some willingness inside us. Then it's a good idea to remember our intention, to re-establish our connection to what we know is useful for us, is wise, and is in alignment with our intention. For instance, for me, after every lunch, there's craving for this little bit of chocolate cookies I brought with me in the retreat, and they're waiting for me in the room. And so when I, after lunch, and I go to my room, and you know, I know that in the closet, hidden, because, you know, out of sight, out of mind, but still the mind remembers that there's a chocolate cookie there. And it's a moment for me to decide, what shall I do? Shall I have the chocolate cookie or not? And remembering our intention, or perhaps first formalizing an intention for ourselves, what is our intention? And with the chocolate cookie, it can be an intention perhaps to lose weight, so not to have it. Perhaps to eat healthy. And this chocolate cookie is not quite, doesn't fall under the category of health food. Perhaps not to nurture an addiction to sweets. But for me, the intention, underlying intention, was none of the above, but the desire to train the mind to work with craving. So when I think about losing weight, I think, I don't care, I'll have that cookie. About eating healthy, well, I'm eating very healthy this week, so one cookie, not a big deal. But when I think of the intention of training the mind to work with cravings, now that is an intention worth paying attention to, and has the power to say, okay, maybe just for the sake of training the mind, maybe I won't have that cookie. It's a good idea to slow down. Sometimes our hand is faster than our mindfulness, you know, and then it's just too late. So slowing down. Considering the results. Bring wisdom and realize that every time we act on this habitual tendency, we deepen its telling in us. And we sow the seed, אנחנו זורעים את הזרע, for its reoccurrence, לכך שזה יחזור על עצמו שוב ושוב. And also, on the other way, is every time we don't act on it, we set in motion an opposite force, contribute to a more skillful way. Another idea is to sit and work with the mental states, emotions and thoughts and physical sensations that accompany the craving. And we know now how to do it. Shaila taught us the methodica of brain, so you're all very familiar and very adept in working with it. Investigate and reflect. What was happening immediately before this craving arose? Was there a mental state or emotion that we wanted to avoid. Like sometimes boredom often sends us to the fridge. You're familiar with that fridge thing? Loneliness can send us to make a phone call or turn on the TV. Pressure makes us want to light a cigarette. Discomfort of just being with ourselves in silence may make us listen to music in excess. Sometimes insecurity brings up sexual desires. So immediately before the craving arose, were we trying to avoid some experience, or were we pulled by the anticipation of the promised pleasure of fulfilling the craving? So, you know, we can see this is, there are like two forces. One is to avoid, and that's why this craving arose. The other is the pull of that specific craving that has a pull on us, and we can investigate which one it is. Of course, if we realize that it was something we wanted to avoid, we work with it. Investigate and reflect. Is there still even a promised pleasure? Or is it just an empty habitual force? Like a friend of mine told me that he doesn't enjoy smoking cigarettes anymore, but he does smoke. But the pleasure is completely gone, but it's such a strong habit that he can't stop. But there isn't anymore even a promise for some pleasure. Sometimes for me, the desire for something sweet after lunch is just, or after any meal, it's just a habit. So we can reflect, will it really bring me satisfaction? And how long will this last? Another way is to listen and listen with discernment with to the thoughts accompanying this craving. Okay, many times cravings come with a whole tape of thoughts, like, I've got to have it. I can't stand it without it. I've always needed it, so I always will need it. This will make me feel so much better. I can't control it. It's stronger than me. So reflect on these thoughts and consider whether they are true or not. You have the choice. Do you have to believe them? My guru used to say, you have no obligations to your thoughts. We kind of act in life as if we have this obligation, as if we signed a contract with the thoughts and they're going to sue us if we don't fulfill our part in the contract. In other words, reflect wisely on how you'd feel afterwards. Will you judge yourself? Will you feel like a failure? Will you really be happier, or on the contrary, feel more miserable? Relax. Relax your body and relax your mind. If there is an inner struggle, it will create more tension, and that will increase the desire for relief through acting on this craving. Usually when there's craving, if we notice, if we look inside, there's some contraction, some feelings. So by consciously relaxing, we can dissipate a little bit the force of the craving. Allow yourself, watch how when applying mindfulness, the craving changes. Does it increase or decrease? Does it take different forms? Does it vanish altogether? Allow yourself to sit with discomfort of wanting. Don't push it away. Don't act on it. Delay your reaction to it. לתרגל השהיית תגובה. Feel and experience fully the experience of wanting. Without fearing, it will overwhelm us or force us into action. Sometimes we are afraid of these desires that come up in us because we are afraid they are stronger than us and that they have the power over us. But if we practice and get more familiar with the experience of just sitting with the experience of wanting, then it lessens its power on us. Sit still in the midst of this fire. Let it burn through you. And trust your ability to simply sit with it. Experience it without being at its mercy. Know that experiencing it fully will diminish its power on us. So next time you recognize a craving in the mind, stop and sit. Anytime you recognize a craving in the mind, stop it. Well, maybe not at work, because if you do it at work, maybe your boss will have a craving to fire you. But any other time that you can, anytime that you can, and you, especially now on the retreat, is a good opportunity to feel a craving and to work with it in real time, in life. And the last thing is, accept and forgive yourself if and when you have acted on a craving. Better luck next time. But don't lose heart and don't give up practicing with it. Now, what about more subtle forms of craving? Like wanting something to be different than it is, like missing the silent moments I had in the last meditation session, like wanting my heart to be open when it's not, like missing the concentration I had yesterday, or the feelings I had on the last day of my last retreat, or craving for information. Have you noticed maybe you hear someone speaking in the meditation hall and curiosity arises? But who's speaking? As if it will give us anything. Like, what difference does it make who's speaking? And then, okay, we open one eye. You know, we keep one eye meditating and the other eye we open and we see someone talking to the managers or, better yet, to Shaila. And we wonder, oh, now, what are they speaking about? I really want to know. So with the more subtle forms of craving, we actually work in the same way we have been doing in the retreat. We recognize that a craving has arisen. And then we have the choice either to recognize it, let it go, and come back to the breath, or recognize that it has arisen and work with it in the same way we've been practicing, accepting that it has arisen, investigating, and not identifying with it as me or mine. With time and practice, we may begin to notice that our cravings get refined and we are no longer tempted and seduced by things that used to tempt and seduce us in the past. In my early 20s, I joined a group of Overeaters Anonymous. It's a 12-step program that works with addiction to food in a similar way that Alcoholic Anonymous would. I wasn't particularly fat or big, but I did notice then that my relationship to food had a quality of being out of control, especially sweet food. And what worked mostly for me in these meetings, and the reason I was able to bring some balance to my relationship to food were two things. One, I began to see through the promise of the bowl of ice cream, for instance, to make me happy, to relieve any stress, to enliven my life, to give me long-lasting satisfaction. Actually, before I was able to see through the promise of the ice cream bar, before I could see its emptiness, I had to recognize that there was such a promise. Because it's, of course, very subtle. It's not written on it, or the bowl is not shouting it. It's not saying, hey, eat me, I will make you happy. I will take all your misery away. I will give you comfort. But in a way it does. So first we have to be willing to see, to realize what it is that we secretly, perhaps unconsciously, expect that experience to give us. What are the underlying hidden expectations and promises? The second thing for me was that I was willing to deal with what was beneath that craving, with the forces that drove me to want it in the first place, the emotions I wanted not to feel or deal with by using that ice cream bowl. So until we are willing to recognize, address and deal with the loneliness, for instance, the pull of that ice cream bowl will be too great a force for us. It will be harder to resist it. We need to develop skillful means to address and deal with the underlying emotions, mental patterns, tendencies and conditionings that generate gross cravings. This may be a gradual and slow process. We may still believe that that cigarette will give us a moment of peace of mind, but slowly and with practice, we may begin to see that it is a lie, and we may simply stop believing it. Our experience will prove to us again and again that moment of peace of mind is fragile, short-lived, not very satisfying, and leaves a bad taste in our mouth. Maybe our cravings are for things more subtle than a cigarette or ice cream. We can have cravings for security or for recognition, craving to be liked or to be praised. Maybe we crave a pat on the back. There's craving for knowledge, craving for power, craving for someone to listen to us, or craving to be appreciated, or to be comforted. In our culture, I find it fairly dominant, the craving to be in a relationship, or to belong socially, the craving for contact, physical and emotional. Every once in a while, a miracle happens, and someone gives us what we want. The appreciation, the recognition, the praise, the hug. For how long does that make us feel good? And are we really comforted? Do we really feel secure now? Are we happy? And how quick do these feelings dissipate, diminish, and vanish, leaving us empty, with even greater and stronger cravings again? I heard once this sentence that I really liked. What is the definition of insanity? It is to do the same thing over and over and expect different results. Can we not define our relationship to sensual pleasures as insanity? In many different suttas, the Buddha explained the arising of craving as a result of contact of the senses with pleasant sense objects. When the eye meets a pleasant sight, the ear a pleasant sound, the mouth a pleasant taste, etc., unless we meet this experience with clarity and equanimity, craving is likely to be formed. And the Buddha also said that craving leads to clinging, to attachment. I remember about my guru, people used to say that there's something really amazing about him, that when there's a party or some gathering and there's a plate of potato chips, he eats one. Can you imagine when the plate of potato chips will be, we'd eat only one? Have you noticed yesterday, I think it was at lunch, when I came to wash the dishes, the first ke'ara had warm water. Anyone notice? Have you noticed the sensations of warm water? Ah, so good. And maybe right with it arose the craving for it to last. Maybe the next ke'ara also has hot water and not cold again. And then we put the hands in and oh. And so the hope, or maybe at dinner time, they'll put hot water again. Maybe I'll write them a note that it's a good idea to put hot water. I'll write a note, thank you for this wonderful food, really lovely food. And by the way, you know, you may want to put hot water in the bowl. How quickly from a pleasant sensual experience, how quickly craving is formed and attachment and clinging are formed. I remember in the first retreat I sat with Shaila about 7 years ago. Actually, I was in the kitchen. I was in a part of the kitchen staff. She said something that really struck me and stayed with me. She said, "It doesn't matter what you don't cling to." Do you remember, Shaila? I love this sentence because first I find it a bit humorous, and also because I find it reduces a little bit the self-importance we give to my issues, my addictions. I'm really working hard on myself. I have really serious problems. Everyone else in the hall, maybe they have some attachments, but they don't have serious attachments like I have. I have really big attachments. And this sentence says, there are no big or small attachments or clingings, because it doesn't matter what we don't cling to, as long as we don't cling. In one of the groups today, someone asked, "Can I enjoy something without attachments? Can I love without attachments?" I invite you to check for yourselves. Can you? Check and see for yourselves next time you experience enjoying something. In the next meal, or when you enjoy the touch of the sun on your face. Notice where and when enjoyment ends and attachment begins. Can we let the enjoyment be? Enjoy the pleasant experience while it is present, the pleasant experience while it is pleasant, and let it go when it's over. Can we let the pleasant experience be pleasant without wanting it to last longer, or wanting to repeat it, without wanting to savor and stretch it, without constructing a self around it? Can we just let it be and let it pass? Can we, after enjoying a pleasant moment, be present and connect to the next moment, to this present moment, without losing ourselves in memory of the pleasant moment that had passed and is gone? Can we meet the pleasant experience with equanimity, meaning without holding on to it, without forming craving and attachments to it? Perhaps we can think of watching our experience as being on a train looking out the windows. The scenery changes. Sometimes we see beautiful flower fields, then it changes to industrial part of a city. Then we see the beach and the waves and the blue sky. Then we pass by Mizbalat Khiria. Can we stay open to the changing sceneries without holding on to the pleasant ones and rejecting the unpleasant ones? Can we meet them with a steady mind, open mind, balanced mind? In one of the most beautiful sutta, the Buddha instructs sage Bahiya to practice in this way. Bahiya, thus should you train yourself. In the seen, let there be only the seen. In the heard, let there be only the heard. In the sensed, let there be only the sensed. In the cognized, let there be only the cognized. Can we practice this? Can we practice this way? But here, thus should you train yourself. In the seen, let there be only the seen. In the heard, let there be only the heard. In the sensed, let there be only the sensed. In the cognized, let there be only the cognized. Freedom is not that we will not experience cravings anymore. Freedom is to not be bound and menuhalim by the cravings that arise. To see them for what they are, cravings, and letting them go. Our cravings may become more and more refined and subtle with practice and time. We may find that we are no longer pulled and deceived and deluded by things that used to in the past. Don't forget that the Buddha spoke of wholesome desires also, desires that we do not want to abandon. Dintosh, the desire to do good in the world, native, the desire to grow and develop on the path, the desire to deepen in wisdom and clarity, the desire to see things as they really are and to free the mind from suffering, the love of silence and renunciation, the movement of the heart to alleviate suffering when we encounter pain in others. Like if you happen to see these dogs out at the dog hospital across the lawn. Sometimes even the heart goes out to these sick dogs, sometimes even forgetting our own pains and suffering in the face of such helpless creatures that are in pain. Or on the retreat, when someone, for instance, noticed that his or her roommate seemed to be perhaps sick and they come and tell the managers. There are many acts of kindness and compassion that we do simply because we are moved to do them. And the Buddha does not ask us to stop them. On the contrary, the Buddha encourages us to develop and cultivate the quality of the heart, such as the Brahmaviharas, loving kindness to ourselves and to others, compassion, to rejoice in another's joy, and to meet our experience with a balanced mind and an open heart. But let's not forget that even though the Buddha spoke highly of these qualities of mind and heart, he also said not to stop them, not to be satisfied even with these very subtle and very worthy desires. For he spoke of a third kind of happiness, a kind that is beyond the most refined and noble desire. Happiness born of a mind free of cravings. In his book, Truth Is, which has been translated to Hebrew, Punjaji says, happiness is not generated from the encounter with desired object, nor from fulfilling your desires. When there is no desire for anything, there is happiness. When you are empty of desire, that emptiness is happiness. העושר אינו מופק ממפגש עם האובייקט הנחשק, וגם לא מסיפוק תשוקותייך. כאשר אין שום תשוקה לשום דבר, יש עושר. כאשר את ריקה מתשוקה, הריקות הזאת היא עושר. Let's sit quietly together. May all beings realize freedom.